So Northern Ireland has been in political limbo for the last 16 months. We have no functioning devolved government. We also have no direct rule from London. Senior civil servants have been doing their best to keep the country up and running, but can that continue? Yesterday, a controversial incinerator in Mollusc was blocked by the High Court. Let's talk to our political editor, Mark Devenport. Mark, tell us a bit of the background behind this and what this decision could mean for the future of Northern Ireland.
This was a decision that was taken by the then Permanent Secretary at the Infrastructure Department, Peter May. Previously, it had actually been rejected by Mark H. Durkin, who was Minister responsible. But Peter May felt, as he looked at this, that he had on his side the Planning Appeals Commission, which is kind of the highest level that planning permission can go to. So he had a ruling from them. He also had advice from the Department of Agriculture and the Environment that it was necessary to move ahead with this waste facility in order to process a lot of waste that was being produced across Northern Ireland. We had pressure from ARC 21, which represents six councils across the east of Northern Ireland. So taking all of that into account, he thought that a further delay would be damaging, and he decided that it would be in the public interest to give this the go-ahead. Initially, it should be said, civil servants like Peter May were very reluctant about making any kind of decisions, even the smaller ones. But they got forced into a situation as the deadlock at Stormont went on longer and longer that they eventually decided, and he decided in this case, that he had to call it. But the judgment that we had yesterday now puts a big question mark over the ability of civil servants to call it in any kind of similar situation.
So what can happen next? We have nationalists calling for the intergovernmental conference, and of course unionists calling for direct rule, and there will be many that will question how our civil servants were not aware of the powers they had and the limitations of those.
Well, I think to some extent the civil servants decided that they had no alternative other than to some extent make it up as they go along. But I think what happened in the court case is that you had some of the lawyers on the side of the environmental campaigners saying, look, there's an inconsistency here in relation to some issues such as his compensation for victims of historic abuse. The civil servants seemed to take a kind of minimalist interpretation of their powers, say, look, we can't really go ahead pending a return to devolution or pending the Secretary of State Karen Bradley stepping in. But in relation to this, Peter May was taking a relatively bold decision. So now, really, I think it is, cut down the room for manoeuvre of the civil servants. It's put a question mark over some big projects that have already been approved, a key one being the North-South Electricity Interconnector, which was also approved by the Department for Infrastructure without having a minister in place. And there's a very similar court battle against that. There's a question mark over decisions yet to be taken. Obviously, Casement Park, the GAA modernised stadium in West Belfast is one. A gas-fired power station in the Belfast Harbour Estate is another. In terms of where we go in terms of the wider politics, as you say, there's a difference between unionists and nationalists saying where it should go. In between those arguments, there may be more pressure on Karen Bradley, but she has been so reluctant, as was her predecessor, James Brokenshire, to do the bare minimum, that it's very hard to see her suddenly moving in and dynamically signing off on a project here, a decision there.
In your understanding, are there any contentious issues which may come into the spotlight now because of this?
Well, I would say Casement Park, possibly, still yet to be processed. We know that there are campaigners who now, if it gets the go-ahead, we'll be able to use this argument to come back on any decision. The gas-fired power station in the harbour. But I think probably the first one to come up in court, because it's already a live legal challenge, is this business of the North-South Interconnector. And they now have a clear precedent, the campaigners in that case, to go and say, if it's not sufficient for the civil servants to move ahead without a minister in relation to the High Tyne incinerator, why would it be in relation to this electricity interconnector?
What about those less contentious issues that they maybe could still make decisions on, and therefore, as things stand, we could limp on in this unusual limbo that we're in?
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose to some extent it depends whether there's an active lobby group out there with the will and the resources to come and challenge anything in court. I mean, there are things that civil servants are doing which they wouldn't normally have done. One thinks of David Stirling heading up the executive's efforts to combat, stormophilia. Normally that would have been a first deputy first minister or one of the executive ministers, but nobody's really going to go to court over that because they think, look, this has to happen. Now, the question, Mark, will be, what about those kind of middle middle range decisions that maybe aren't making the headlines. Peter May, when he gave me an interview back in September last year, said, look, we've taken various other planning decisions. Nobody's complained about them, but they probably didn't have the 4,000 objections that this one did. So, you know, the I think civil servants being what they are, they don't like being in this situation anyway.
Yeah, or the spotlight.
Yeah. I mean, there's the joke about Sir Humphreys really running the country, but the idea of the Sir Humphreys running the country is that they do it behind the scenes circuitously and they just give their minister the piece of paper which the minister reads out. What they don't want to be doing is actually doing it in the spotlight very much up front. So they may well now take a more cautious approach. And, you know, it's possible this will get appealed through the courts, but, you know, there may also be a political avenue of appeal, which is to go to Karen Bradley and say, look, this limbo has been going on for 16 months. It is getting completely untenable. You say you're interested in good governance in Northern Ireland. Something has got to give here.
Well, Sinn Féin, they want a fresh look at the scope and remit of the intergovernmental conference. Is that possible? Because at the minute, it does not take decisions over devolved matters.
Yeah, I mean, its remit is meant to be for non-devolved matters. Now, there is an argument over what happens with it in the absence of a devolved assembly. You could argue, I suppose, that everything's a non-devolved matter at the moment because there's no devolved executive up and running. Of course, we do have a devolved civil service who've been doing their best to fill the void. So nationalists would say, oh, well, look, actually, if we got British and Irish ministers together, they could consult on matters and that would provide more direction. But still, ultimately, somebody would have to sign off on a decision and probably you would have to think, given that Northern Ireland remains part of the UK, that has to still be a British minister. So in a way, would the British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference just give a bit of cover for what would be something looking increasingly direct, like direct rule? And we do know, of course, that the DUP is no fan of the British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference. It's called it a talking shop. We do know that the Conservatives are entirely reliant on the DUP for staying in power. So that probably explains the reluctance that has been shown so far by Karen Bradley to accede to requests from Simon Coveney for a meeting of that conference.
The SDLP leader, Colm Eastwood, will speak to him in a moment, but he has called for the British and Irish governments to immediately reconvene the British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference to agree a package of legislation and then to implement it to end what he's describing as a political stalemate. Is that likely?
You see, from the nationalist perspective, they prefer the idea of the British-Irish Intergovernmental Conference.
It's hard
appearing.
To say that. It's tripped me up a couple of times already.
Yes. They prefer that because it doesn't look like unalloyed direct rule. But so far, I mean, Karen Bradley's response, she has been asked officially by Simon Coveney to convene this conference. So far, she's been saying, I don't want to do anything that will make anything worse. And that's obviously because she is mindful of unionist concerns. And it does seem to me that, you know, she's stuck yet again on the horns of this dilemma. Does she please nationalists and annoy unionists, or does she please unionists and annoy nationalists? And at the moment, you'd have to say, in terms of the rail politic, she is always keen to please the DUP first and foremost, because they do have those 10 votes in the Commons.
I know when you come on, I like to ask you to gaze into your crystal ball, Mark, but in the next 6 months, what do you think is going to happen? And the big question, who will be in charge?
I think we'll have probably continuing reluctance from the Northern Ireland office to declare full-scale direct rule, but this may push us more down the route of direct rule, like with civil servants coming on an issue-by-issue basis to Karen Bradley and saying, look, you've got to give us cover on this. We can no longer go it alone. Will we have a restoration and devolution? Still looks unlikely. This side, I would have thought of both Brexit and the RHI inquiry maybe coming to at least to the stage where it looks at the kind of closure of the scheme, which is expected around autumn, where we'll have probably some fairly hot and heavy hearings featuring the likes of Arlene Foster and Jonathan Bell.
OK, our political editor, Mark Devenport, thank you very much. Let's speak now to the SDLP leader, Colm Eastwood. Good morning to you.
Morning, Vinnie.
How long can things, in your opinion, continue as they are?
Well, not very much longer. I've been saying for months now that we have to take action. We have always been very cynical as to what powers the civil service have, and the civil service shouldn't be put in this position. This is a political problem created by politicians and not solved yet by politicians. So I put the proposal 3 months ago. I also put a proposal nearly 8 months ago to say something similar, but the proposal is simple. The two governments call the Intergovernmental Conference, which of course is a key part of the Good Friday Agreement and should be meeting anyway. Those two governments, on the basis of all of the discussions and negotiations that have gone on for the past 16 months, put together a deal and go ahead and legislate and implement it. That would allow us then to get back to government. The process so far has absolutely failed. But what's even worse right now, we don't even have a process. We can't even get a negotiation or a proper discussion around all of these issues. I phoned Karen Bradley last night to once again put that proposal to her, to tell her yesterday's judgment made it very, very obvious that what is happening now cannot continue. And what we talked about yesterday was an incinerator, but at some point we're going to be talking about life-changing and life-saving potential decisions that need to be taken by government ministers.
What was her response to you yesterday?
Well, you know, to be honest, it was passive. It was, I have to read the judgment. It was the same as it always is. And the British government have completely checked out of this process. They are so afraid of upsetting 10 MPs in Westminster that they're afraid to do anything at all. And they have put us right in the middle of all of these big issues. They're using us as a pawn in Brexit in terms of legacy, in terms of getting the institutions back up and running. And I have repeatedly warned her, I'm getting angrier and angrier every time I speak to her, to tell her that, you know, you cannot use us as a pawn in your game in Westminster.
I'm intrigued as to what happens in those conversations. So when you say to the Secretary of State, you cannot continue to use us as a pawn, what does she say? Does she react in any way to understand how frustrated you are over this?
Well, I keep being told how much they understand our frustration, but nothing ever happens. And I can tell you that makes me even more frustrated. And if I'm frustrated, what about the hundreds of thousands of people who are sitting on waiting lists? How frustrated are they? What about people waiting for decisions to be taken right across the civil service? How frustrated must they be? What about school principals, many of whom are meeting over the next couple of weeks to talk about how squeezed their budgets are? Okay. How frustrated must those people be? So the political system has failed. And in that situation, our process means that the two governments have to step in. That's why the Intergovernmental Conference has to be called. And by the way, this is not some sort of nationalist land grab. This is in the Good Friday Agreement. This is about two governments implementing what two parties could not implement.
Yes, but you're aware that at this point that does not take in decisions. It doesn't make decisions over devolved matters. And you hear what Mark Davenport said there. Is that really likely for changes to be made for that to do what you need it to do?
Well, we're not calling for joint authority right now. But that is something that will have to be considered if we don't get an agreement here to have ministers here. What we want is ministers in Northern Ireland and Assembly here, the Good Friday Agreement working. What I am saying is one or two meetings of the Intergovernmental Conference could agree a package of legislation based on all of the negotiations that were had between the two parties and hopefully some of the concerns that the rest of us have. They would implement those through Westminster and get it done and get us back to work. Clear the decks of this agreement. Do the language legislation. Fix the petition of concern. Allow us to get back to work because we're getting paid and we're not doing our job. I think that is a total and utter disgrace.
Is this simply down to Peter May making the wrong decision and going against a decision that your minister made?
Well, Peter May did make the wrong decision, but this is not about Peter May. Mark H. Durkin opposed and refused this application, but then what happened later was Chris Hazard, when he was an infrastructure minister and that power went to them, moved the position from the ministerial direction from being opposed to being neutral, which I think then allowed Peter May to make that decision. But this is not about that. This is about highlighting the fact that ministers aren't there and that civil servants should not be put in a position where they have to guess what their powers are. That's what they have to do because the British government have taken a completely hands-off approach to this process and to running this place. We don't want British ministers. The last thing we want to see is direct rule. We want to see government ministers back elected by the people in Northern Ireland. Okay. That's why the Intergovernmental Conference should come together to sort the problem out, not to run the place.
We'll speak to Steve Aiken from the UUP in just a moment. They're asking this morning if the civil service as is fit for purpose. Do you believe it is?
Well, I think there are major problems within the civil service. I've thought that for a long time. But we also had 10 years of unbroken devolution, unbroken government, and that was never resolved or sorted out. And many people, I think, looking now back on those 10 years will say it was, in terms of running a government, it left a lot to be desired, and there are many of the things that we were saying at the time.
So just clear one point up for me, if you would, Colm. ARC 21 is a joint committee which is comprised of elected members. Declan O'Loan, SDLP councillor, he is the chair. Did he not support the incinerator?
Well, individual councillors had individual positions. The party position was very, very clear. And when we were in government, both Alex Atwood and Mark H. Durgan opposed and refused the application. And the SDLP has stood with the residents on this issue from the very beginning. And if there is an appeal, we'll stand with them again.
Yeah, so why did the chair, who is an SDLP councillor, go against the party stance on this?
Well, that's a question that you'll have to ask him.
Well, but surely you've asked him, given how contentious this issue is, and you are the leader of the party.
Well, when people are elected to councils or elected to positions within councils, they're not only there as members of a political party. They're there to represent that council in that role that they have. And our people take those positions very, very seriously.
Are you annoyed that he took that position?
No, I think the party position is absolutely clear. And the residents who oppose this incinerator are very clear as to our position. When we had the power to do something about it, we stopped it.
But are they really clear as your position? Because your councillor, who is on that board and is in fact the chair, he was in support of it.
Well, Vinny, you can ask Mark Davenport, because he was on not 5 minutes ago when he said that Mark H. Durkin opposed and refused this application. This application was not going ahead because the SDLP stopped it. And now we have that decision being vindicated by the court.
OK. Colm Eastwood, SDLP leader, thank you very much.